We're joined now in the studio by Susan McGuire of the Chapel Hill Public Library. How are you today?
Great.
And we're talking books as always. And we were talking about just a few minutes ago here on the air, we had the report about the lost colony of Roanoke and how they may have found it.
Yay.
Which is, yeah, we're really excited
and the
about
fringe.
It.
I heard them say fringe.
I'm waiting for the
lost colony of the 70s.
The fringe?
Yeah. All right.
I get it. Yeah. Sorry.
Fringe vests and
jokes. Oh, that's made a comeback like three times, hasn't it?
Yeah, and I feel like fringes are happening now.
Are happening now. Yeah, I think there's a couple stores in the mall. I'm not a fringe. I'm not a fringe fan.
That's not what
it
I
got
came here
canceled.
To talk about.
John Noble was great, it didn't last. But the lost colony of Roanoke is back, and every so often you get stories like this where some archaeologist uncovers something and it's really exciting and they think they've discovered the lost colony and where it went and they've got all this new information and there's this flurry of excitement and then, oh, it wasn't actually a thing. But one of these days, some archaeologist is going to find something that actually sticks as
this
the
could
lost
be the
colony.
Thing.
This could be the thing.
Have some hope and confidence and
absolutely.
Or something.
One of these days, an archaeologist is going to uncover something, and they're going to be like, oh my God, it's the lost colony of Roanoke, but it's going to turn out to have been Jimmy Hoffa whole time. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I always wonder, I want to go back in time and see, you know, draw assumptions on like what people use different tools for
right,
and what different
right.
fashions were for.
Yes.
And then I just think it would be funny to go back and say, like, oh, they actually used this fringe to keep flies away.
Right, right.
Or whatever.
And we've gotten it completely wrong. I remember.
It was just fashion.
I don't know. I can't remember who wrote it. I want to say it was Kurt Vonnegut or maybe it was in The Illustrated Man. I'm not sure. But it was a science fiction-ish kind of with a sense of irony writer like that who wrote a story about future anthropologist, archaeologist who had uncovered this lost artifact from a hitherto unknown society. And it was a film that they were able to rig up and play, and everything that they know about this society is taken from this film. It's the only remaining artifact from this lost ancient society. And as soon as they can figure out what the letters that spell out a Walt Disney production mean at the very end of it, they'll be able to figure out the history of this society.
That sounds like a Douglas Adams thing.
It might have been, yeah. Something like that. Mm. But anyway, it's a great short story. I just spoiled the ending. Cool. We're talking books. And with historical mysteries as our topic, inspired by the Lost Colony. I don't have any books about the Lost Colony of Roanoke. I don't think I have any books about North Carolina in general, but we were just sort of brainstorming. We weren't even brainstorming. You came in and said one thing. What was it? You had found some mysteries with real fictional mysteries in which real people were characters, and that now I've got like five things written down because that just sparked something in my head. So I've got a whole bunch here today.
All right, let's hear.
But these are okay. So these are historical mysteries. These are either fictional novels or nonfiction books in which some historical mystery plays a part. So I'm going to knock the first one, the obvious one, out of the way right off the bat and say Angels and Demons by Dan Brown or perhaps The Da Vinci Code, both of which are, if you haven't read them and you've been living under a rock and you don't know the story, actually really good, quick, light summer reading with a lot of information mixed in with the pseudo information, so it's a lot of fun
to
read both of them. It's definitely not a textbook.
But yeah, they move really fast.
You will never look at the Louvre the same way again.
Or the Vatican.
Yeah, especially the Vatican. But
well,
but I liked them. They don't necessarily reward rereading. But the story is really, really it's paced well. He's a great storyteller. So I like them. Angels and Demons, especially. It's not much of a. It's not as much of a historical mystery as The Da Vinci Code is. But I like them both.
Yeah. Well, but he has to go through texts and
he does, yeah.
It's kind of cool and fun. And
yeah, and sort of like
decipher the Walt
going
Disney
all over Rome.
Of
right,
the past.
Right. So I like those. All right, so that's my foray. What's yours?
I have a series, and I don't know what the series is called, but it's set in colonial America.
Okay.
And the first one's called Bone Rattler. Rattler.
Okay.
Rattler. Anyway. And the it's a trope we like to call the amateur detective.
Yes.
Where the person solving the crime is not, like, a police person,
right,
but
right.
they're... and so this detective is a Scottish prisoner.
Okay.
Who is in indentured servitude to a company in America. So, you know, he's being shipped across, and people on the ship keep dying. And then one of his friends dies, and he has some medical training, so he tries to sort it out and gets on the wrong side of everybody and...
Interesting.
...has to solve the mystery before he becomes the next victim.
Ooh, Elliot Pattison is the author.
Yeah.
I just pulled it up on Amazon. Bone Rattler: A Mystery of Colonial America by Elliot Pattison.
And there are several.
And it's number one in the series. So yeah. Have you read all the books in the series? Have you read several of the books in the series? I'm the same way. I start a novel that's like book one in a series. I did this with The Hunger Games, where I read it and I really liked it. It was really good. And then I finished the book and I was like, yep, I'm done. I'm good.
I'm terrible.
Yeah.
Even if I love them, I can't read series. Like the Outlander series.
Yeah.
I can't read anymore because I don't want anything else bad to happen to Jamie and Claire.
Okay.
And that's how it works.
It's like Lemony Snicket all over again.
I'm saving their lives.
Yeah. That's good. Speaking with Susan McGuire of the Chapel Hill Public Library, we're talking books and novels that are... Novels are books. We're talking books that are historical mysteries or that deal with historical mysteries. You mentioned fictional novels that involve real people as the characters. That reminded me... Actually, I just went through The Man Who Was Poe by Avi, which is a kid's book. But it is, it's a kid who comes over. I've recommended this before, so I'm not going to count this as my recommendation, but it's about a kid who comes over from England with his sister and their aunt, and they're looking for their mother who's been lost, and they're in Baltimore, I think, and then the aunt disappears, and then the sister disappears, and the boy is left all alone, and he runs into this guy who says, I'll help you out. And it turns out that the guy is Edgar Allan Poe.
Oh.
And one thing leads to another. It's still one of my favorite kids novels, and I went and repurchased the book so that I could have it in my collection after having gotten rid of it. So that's a cool book, but the one that I haven't recommended before, also historical mystery involving real people, is The Alienist by Caleb Carr.
Oh, yeah.
Which is such a good book about the late 19th century. Theodore Roosevelt is one of the major characters, and it's got a lot to do with the emergence of sort of modern detective methods and fingerprinting and things like that, but there's a lot going on, and it's a really, really good, like, thrilling, fast-paced mystery. That also makes you feel a little bit smarter when you're done with it, even though you may not necessarily be.
That one is really strong on historical detail, right?
Yeah. All right. So that's mine. What do you got?
Okay. What else? I don't have any other American ones.
Okay. I think I'm done with it. No, I'm not done with American. I'm done with novels. I'm only on nonfiction from here on out. But
Okay, I have a couple.
Okay.
There's a lot of sort of 18th century ones that I enjoy. The first is the Amelia Peabody series by Elizabeth Peters.
Okay.
And the first one is called The Crocodile in the Sandbank, I think.
All right.
And Amelia Peabody is a Victorian woman who she's a spinster, basically, and her father dies and leaves her a bunch of money, so she decides she's going to pursue her dream of being an archaeologist.
Awesome.
And she has a short temper and is kind of a jerk, but awesome, like in an awesome way.
So an archaeologist, then,
well,
basically.
Yes. Yeah. And she carries a parasol that she hits people with if they do her wrong. And there's kind of a vaguely supernatural element to the mysteries, and some of them take place in England, but actually most of them take place in Egypt.
Okay.
And there's a guy, she joins an archaeological trip, and I don't know. That I think is a series you should read from the beginning because relationships develop and, you know.
Okay.
But Amelia Peabody is such a good character.
Awesome. Is that a series too?
Yes.
Yeah. How many books are...
actually, the author just passed away, but I think there are like close to 20.
Okay. So that can keep you busy for a good long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Awesome.
And so, I'll give a plug for the audiobooks, which I enjoy.
Okay. Does the Chapel Hill Public Library have audiobooks?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. We have books on CD and downloadable audiobooks.
Ooh, nice. Pretty significant collection, too, right?
I think so. Yeah. I think it's a good one.
It's actually a really cool collection. Yeah. So, for a plug for the Chapel Hill Public Library, so
thank
visit
you.
Them online and check out their catalog
trip,
of audiobooks.
End of summer road trip.
Yes, which is coming up soon. All right. So, for nonfiction, I've actually got a collection of a double collection of short pieces that was written, I believe, in the 80s, but maybe the 70s, by a writer named Paul Arendt, A-U-R-A-N-D-T. And it's the rest of the story, the old Paul Harvey radio pieces where he'd get on and he'd tell the story, and then there would be this twist at the end, and now you know the rest of the story. This guy, Paul Arendt, collected, or actually didn't collect, I don't think. I think he went out and wrote two books worth of historical mystery-ish kind of things that, you know, he's telling the story, and then there's this twist at the end. It turns out it was Abraham Lincoln the entire time, or something along those lines. But really, really good, compelling. I read them when I was really young, like 8 or something, and I learned a lot from all of these
books.
Is
there like one detective going through every story?
Well, they're nonfiction, so it's just like I'm telling you this historical story, but I'm telling it to you in a way that I'm leaving out this vital detail.
Right.
It was on Mars or something along those lines.
This whole time.
Yeah. But really, really cool. So the rest of the story by Paul Arendt, I don't think it's in print anymore, but it's really worth checking out if you can find it at like a used bookstore or if a library has it. I don't know if the Chapel Hill Public Library has it because it's kind of obscure now. It's like 30 years old, but definitely worth checking out.
I don't know if we have it.
I'm not sure. I would actually honestly be surprised if you did, because this is, I don't see this anywhere anymore. I don't even know how I got a hold of it in the first place, but
if I could talk and use the internet at the same time, I would check our catalog.
I'm going to check the catalog right now while you're talking.
ChapelHillPublicLibrary.org.
ChapelHillPublicLibrary.org is the website where you can
someone, do stuff.
All right. So what's what do you got?
Okay, so three of my favorite book series are historical mysteries. So what order should I do it in?
Beginning to end.
Okay, good. I'll go from furthest in the past forward.
Okay, okay.
We have the Sebastian St. Cyr Mysteries, mm-hmm, by C.S. Harris. And these are, Sebastian St. Cyr was like the third son in a family. And so he joined the army and all that stuff that second and third sons did in the British aristocracy. But then his brothers died, so he ended up inheriting the title, and he solves crimes.
Okay, cool.
That's not a very compelling book to, but, you know, people ask him, you know, in the first book, they ask him to discreetly inquire into this situation that, because of his status, he can get some answers that the newly formed Bow Street Runners can't get.
Okay.
So, plus he's like kind of an interesting, tormented guy.
Like it?
Yeah.
All right. That's number one.
Number one. Number two is set in the 20s in Australia, and it's called the Phryne Fisher Mysteries by Kerry Greenwood.
Okay.
And Phryne, the first one is called Cocaine Blues.
Huh.
And Phryne is, she's basically a flapper, but she grew up poor in England and then ended up inheriting all this money, but she hated rich people in England, so she took her money and moved to Australia. And again, people sort of come to her to discreetly inquire on missing people and such.
Awesome.
But I think the mysteries are less compelling than her character. Like, she wears fabulous clothes and she like flies planes and gets herself into all kinds of scrapes, and she's awesome.
Awesome. All right. That's number two. Did you have a third?
Yes.
All right.
And this one is set a little bit later than Phryne Fisher. It's the Maisie Dobbs Mysteries by Jacqueline Winspear.
Oh, I've heard of those. Yeah.
Yeah. And they start in the late 20s.
Okay.
So Maisie Dobbs was a nurse in World War I, and she has physical and emotional scars from that. And it also deals with kind of issues of class, because she is well-educated, but she was raised poor because she had a wealthy patron were, you know, she was a maid in their house, and then the woman sent her to school, and then she became a nurse. And she is starts to study psychology, and then people, mostly the first couple mysteries are men who have died, and they're things that are related to the First World War. And actually, I heard the author speak once, and it was, she has this interesting backstory for the character. The author is British, and she said that when she was younger, her mom would make her go visit all the old ladies in the neighborhood, and they all have these, like, sepia portraits on their mantle of brothers or fiancés who died during World War One, and she was thinking about how all these men died, and, so you have all these kind of heartbroken women around the town, and then that's how Maisie started to form.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
All right. I've got one more, and I'm going to take your 1920s and update it by about 40 years. This is not political history, but music history. This is our Gary Patterson is the author, and the book is called The Walrus Was Paul. And it is a study of the Paul is Dead mystery from the Beatles, with all of the with a whole compendium of all of the little hints and clues that are sort of sprinkled around the albums and the album covers and the movies, some of which are so specific that they had to have been put there on purpose by some playful tricksters who were just trying to keep the rumors going. But this rumor that Paul McCartney died in, what, 1966 or something like that, and was replaced by an imposter, that people have studied this and they've listened to and pored over the Beatles albums and the movies, and they've looked at the albums and they've pulled out all of these little hints and things that suggest that Paul died in 1966. And it's this really fascinating book about the history of the rumor and how it got started and all of the different little pieces and all of the albums and everything, and how the rumor sort of perpetuated to this day. And it's a really fascinating book, and it's funny, and it's a lot of fun. So, and it'll make you think twice the next time you look at Paul McCartney. Or is he?
That's a nice circle from the Dan Brown books.
Right.
Feature a cryptographer.
Another
conspiracy
theory. Yep. It's a real life Angels and Demons.
Yeah.
All right. That's all I got. Do you have any more?
That's all I have.
All right.
This list is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
I'm not really familiar with all these books, but it has, like, Lizzie Borden, 30 years after she's acquitted for axe murder, she becomes a detective, apparently.
Oh, nice. Oh, that's
Chaucer,
awesome. Right.
The Rat Pack.
Of course. So, the Rat Pack as detectives?
Yes.
A
lot of fun stuff. Actually, the Oscar Wilde one by Giles Brandreth, I read the first one, and it was very good.
Awesome. All right. Well, head to chapelhillpubliclibrary.org and check out, is it .org or .com? It's
.org,
right? .org. And check out, I was just on the website, and I couldn't remember, but chapelhillpubliclibrary.org, and check out the catalog. Look at their audiobooks. They got a lot of really cool ones, and a lot of these books are available there as well. Susan McGuire, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.